So welcome to this session, which is called When Things Go Wrong, Error Handling in SQL Server. And before I start talking about the topic, I'd like to extend a thanks to all sponsors that are here today, which makes the breaks a little more interesting because you can go and watch their offerings, and also they reduce the cost for you of being here. So big thanks to them, and particularly I like to call out that Volvo is here. That's nice for me, because, well, in case you didn't know, my name is Adam Samaskog, and I'm from Sweden, from Stockholm, where I play an independent consultant. And I've been an MVP for SQL Server since 2001. There are a few ones who have actually been MVP for a longer time, so I'm not unique. And I have a website, samaskog.sc, where you find, well, as you used to put it, a small collection of large articles. And the largest article of them all is called Error and Transaction Handling in SQL Server. As a matter of fact, it's so large that I had to split it into three parts and three appendixes. It's like 250 pages. And you might say to yourself, this guy must be crazy. 250 pages about something as trivial as error handling. Well, error handling in SQL Server is unfortunately not very trivial, as you will find out within the coming hour. And my email address is, well, sql@samaskog.sc if you want to reach me. So what will I talk about? So my focus for this presentation, because I've only got 1 hour, is to talk about how to handle unexpected errors. Then you might say, so what is not an unexpected error? Well, sometimes you might, oh, I'm going to do this. It could actually end in a primary key violation, but in that case, I'm going to do this instead. But I'm not going to talk about that because, first of all, you need to know to handle the unexpected errors. The unexpected errors, well, that is because you have a bug in your code, or there is bad data you did not foresee, or bad input, and so on and so on and so on. And you must have a general framework to handle these so your application suddenly doesn't go out to the west, to the left and perform something that you should not do. So, what will I talk about? The first thing I will do is, what action will SQL Server take when it finds things that you've done something wrong? And I will continue that theme with what happens when you put the option exact abort on. Now, the basic error handling mechanism, I guess you all know, is try-catch, so I will talk about try-catch. And I will give you a recipe for writing catch blocks. And then I will actually talk about client-side error handling. And then I will talk about how to handle nested procedures and transactions. And finally, I will give a quick look at natively compiled SQL procedures that appeared with Hackathon in SQL 2014. And this is the point where I turn back to see how the slides look in 4.3, because I've rehearsed them all in 69. Okay. I hope that you can see it even if you're sitting on the front. So, SQL Server runs your code and he's at it again, or she's at it again. He can never do anything right. I need to raise an error. Now what happens now? Well, we're going to look at that in Management Studio. So I have a script here. And I'm first going to just walk you through this script so you see what's in it. The first thing I do is to turn off no count so we don't get these one rows affected messages. And the next thing I do is to drop a table if it exists. And if you haven't seen this syntax, drop table if it exists, it was added in SQL 2016. And then I create my test table, which is very simple. It has an ID column and a date column, and both of these are not null. And there's also an XML column that I will use in one special case. And that's also primary key. The next thing I will do, I will create a procedure using syntax added in SQL 2016 SB1. Very popular. Create or alter. Yeah. And this procedure, well, the first thing it does is just to print that it's starting, and then it starts a transaction, and then it goes on and adds a row to this table, a perfectly normal row, ID 11, and the date. And then there is another insert statement. And it adds one row, actually adds three rows at one time. The first of these, number 12, and number 14, are perfect, okay. But the one in the middle, ID 13, yeah, 13 is a bad number. That one will fail because it tries to add null into the date column. And before the procedure completes, it also adds one more row, single row, number 15, and then it commits the transaction and prints that it has completed. And then there is an outer procedure, which all it does is to print that it's starting, runs the inner SP, and then prints that it has completed. The next batch runs this outer procedure. And the final batch inspects what data do I have in the table. I then check, do I have any transaction active at this point? And if I have, I scream out, yes, there is an active transaction. And I roll it back. Or else I more silently say, no, there is no active transaction. Now, before I go, because I will run the entire window at once, before I do this, I'd like to point out SQL Server will not see all of this at once, because this word go here is not an SQL statement. It is an instruction to Management Studio to stop and split up the script in batches. And it will send one batch at a time, first this batch, wait for SQL Server to come back, and so on. And many of you probably know this, but I've seen enough people asking questions which indicates they don't. So I want to spell that out, because we need to understand, we need to know this and understand this to understand the output of what you're seeing. So I will run this now, and keep in mind, this one is good, this one is good, this one has an error in it. So what will now happen? Well, we have heard that transactions are supposed to be atomic. So it seems reasonable to assume that the table will be empty after running the script. So I go and run it. But no, there are two rows in the table, 11 and 15. We take the full output first. Starting and starting. The inner SP starting, yes. Cannot insert the value null and so on. The statement has been terminated. Inner SP completed, outer SP completed. Two rows in the table and no active transaction. So apparently, SQL Server does not care about this atomic transaction, a basic feature, the ACID principle in relational databases. Now, what is atomic in SQL Server are statements. So 11 and 15 are there, but not 12 and 14, because statements are atomic. If you do an insert or an update or delete, SQL Server will either carry it out in whole or nothing, not at all, rollback if there is one error. You can insert a million rows, and there's one not null violation, and all million rows will be lost. But if you have a multi-statement transaction like here, no, SQL Server continues on the next statement, and the transaction is committed. So I will comment on this row, and I will then take out this row instead. Oh, again an error, but now it says bad date. So this will cause a different error, conversion error. Well, that shouldn't matter, should it? Well, it did. Starting, conversion fail, and that's it. No completed. That is, and now there are no rows in the table, and no active transaction. So this time, SQL Server said, oh, really bad error. So this time, SQL Server aborted the batch and rolled back the transaction. And we got the atomic thing that we expected. So I will comment out that one. I will comment out that row. And then I got this one up my sleeve. Now the error is that the table does not exist. So I'll go and run this. And, a whole bunch of errors. Starting. Invalid object name, no such table. And then there is message 266. Transaction count after execute indicates a mismatching number of begin and commit statements. Previous count 0, current count 1. And outer SP completed, and then we get this message 266 again. And there's one row in the table, and after the test, there is an active transaction. So, what happened this time? Well, SQL Server arrived at this statement and said, oh, what a bad procedure. It refers a table that does not exist. I don't like this procedure. I don't want to run it anymore. But then it said, now, I don't think this error is so bad that I should stop execution or roll back the transaction. No, I will be a nice guy and continue execution down here after the exec statement. And this guy does not know about the transaction started, so it does not roll back the transaction. So we are left with an open transaction, which could be really bad, because I could, if I did not know about this, I could keep on assembling locks, doing updates, and then at some point I might do a rollback and lose my updates, and while I'm holding the locks, I might block other users. These orphan transactions are really painful. And for this error, I should explain that a little more. This error you get if you enter a procedure with, let's say, an active transaction and you roll it back, or vice versa, you enter a transaction without one, and leave it with an active one, you get this error 266. And I got it twice because It happened in both procedures. So, have we seen it all? Here we have the semicolon throw statement that was added in SQL 2012. It permits us to raise a user defined error. I have to give a message number, which has to be 50,000 or more. Then there's a text of the message, and I have to give a so called state. So I run this. And starting, I'm throwing an error, one row in the table, and after the test, there is an active transaction. Because for this error, what happens is that SQL Server aborts execution of the batch. An entire batch is aborted, but the transaction is not rolled back, it's left open. Race error, it's a very similar statement. It permits us to do the same thing as throw, it just has a different syntax and has been in the product for a long time. So I run this, we could expect that it would behave the same, but it doesn't. Starting, I'm raising an error. Completed, four rows in the table, because I've commented all those bad 13. So with race error, execution continues on the next statement. Now these, when you see these kind of things, that's when you think SQL Server is designed for maximum confusion. So our next test is an update statement, which is a little more complicated than the others, and this involves the XML column. But I can tell you, you're not even seeing it all of it, and that doesn't matter. Just believe me, this is a perfectly normal, okay update statement. It should complete successfully. So I'm pressing execute, and it takes a little while. And we can go over to this window and see what happens. And you see, apparently it didn't, because we got an error message. We did not even get the final results. And you can see up here, let's see if I can do this. Yeah, maybe. Not connected. So, you see here is the message 3624, level 20, a system assertion check has failed, and then there is a long thing going on. The important is this, level 20, if that error message has a severity level of 20 or higher, SQL Server will just cut the connection entirely. And there is a second message that tells us basically the same thing. And then there is this message, 20054, which I can reveal is not an SQL Server message. It comes from the network layer, actually. Things get a little messed up here. But anyway, and what this is all about, it's actually a bug in SQL Server. So that's why things go wrong. And also that bug has been fixed in a later build. But for the purpose of the demo, I'm using the build which has the bug. So that can also happen. Your connection gets cut. And then I have this statement here, wait for. You might think here, okay, wait for delay 1 minute. What could go wrong with that? So I guess you think he's going to talk now for 1 minute about, wait a minute, it stopped. And there is an error message. Execution timeout expired. The timeout elapsed prior to the completion of the operation, or the server is not responding. So for some reason, SQL Server is so fit to quit this after 5 minutes. But wait a minute, was it that really SQL Server? Message -2. Now, does SQL Server really have negative message numbers? As a matter of fact, the lowest message number in SQL Server is 21, what I can see. No, this message comes from Management Studio itself. Or more precisely, maybe SQL Client, the client API. And the reason this happened is that I've done this in the query options. I've configured an execution timeout for the purpose of the demo for 5 seconds. Now, that's sort of an odd thing to do, you may think. Why would I do that? Well, in Management Studio, normally it waits forever, no matter how long the query runs. But the default behavior for a program written in C# using ADO.NET or basically any other client API in any other language is that after 30 seconds, you will get a message akin to this one, timeout expired. There's some few exceptions to APIs that don't do this, but most do this. In my opinion, that's a hole in the head. And the reason this is a hole in the head is this, one of the reasons. You see here, one row in the table, after the test, there is an active transaction. Now, because what happens is, at this point, is that The client API also tells SQL Server, stop doing what you're doing. It sends a so-called attention signal. And so SQL Server complies, it rolls back the current statement, so if it would happen in this statement, it would not leave one row inserted. It would either be zero or two rows. And there's one more way I can achieve this. I can press execute and then press this red button. Query is canceled by user. And if I run this last batch, you see there's one row in the table. The red button has the same effect as far as SQL Server is considered. It sends an attention signal. So this completes the first round of looking at this. But I'm going to uncomment that one, so we get back to the starting point. And then I get to the top. There is this command, set executable on, which changes the rules. So I'm going to run this again, and now it's the not null error. Last time, we got two rows in the table. But this time, there are no rows in the table. You see, there's no completed messages. The effect of executable on is that it makes the error, this error, to abort the batch and roll back the transaction. But not surprisingly, the bad date behaves the same as before. Up there, I need to click. Aborts the batch, rolling back the transaction. And, well, we can take these. No such table. And now this time, this error also aborts the batch and rolls back the transaction. So we get more consistency. And the throw then. Also this, no, wait a minute. Well, it is the same behavior except that I forgot, sorry. Throw also have the same behavior. Now when executable abort on, the transaction is also rolled back and we do not get this orphan transaction. So then we might expect race error to do the same, but SQL Server is designed for maximum confusion. So now race error doesn't care about executable abort on race error, execution always continue even when the executable abort is on. I'm going to skip that update because that one behaves the same. But the wait for though is interesting. I'm going to run this and then I'm going to talk about something for 5 seconds. Waiting for it to complete, yeah. And you see, this time, there are no rows in the table. So, when exact abort is on, and you get this attention signal, SQL Server also rolls back the transaction. So, to summarize what we have seen so far, the default behavior that what can happen is when exact abort is on, off, is in terms of how severe the action is, SQL Server can close the connection, it can abort the batch and roll back the transaction. It can abort the batch without rolling back. It can abort the scope and continue in the caller. And it can roll back the current statement and continue in the next one. And then you may ask to yourself, well, is there any pattern? Why does all these things happen? Well, closing the connection, I already touched that. Those are internal errors in SQL Server. SQL Server simply cuts the connection because it knows that further execution is not safe. It cannot guarantee that it would produce the correct results. So that one is actually okay. Number four, well, the behavior is really, what they were smoking on the day when they invented that, I don't know. But at least there is consistency so far that these are always compilation errors at runtime. Now, compilation errors at runtime, how can you get that? Well, SQL Server has this concept of deferred name resolution. So if you create a procedure, which refers to non-existent table, SQL Server says, maybe that table will appear at runtime. And when you start the procedure and builds a plan for the procedure, it will probably appear at runtime. And it would be true if it's a temp table created in the procedure. But when it comes to the query and finally compiles it, and maybe there is some wrong, maybe because the table name was misspelled, or maybe because a column in a permanent table was misspelled, but the temp table that was in the query did not exist, and so on. But it's always these compilation errors. A group number three is quite small because, to my knowing, up to SQL 2008, there were no such errors. They introduced these in 2012 because, well, they thought it was fun. Well, the semicolon throw statement, execute with results, it's a new feature. Errors around that one also behave the same way. I've seen errors related to hecaton in that way, and there might be a few more, but it's not very many. And then you have groups 2 and 5. Abort the batch and roll back the transaction, or roll back the current statement and continue next. And I just said, many use errors willy-nilly. It's like they've been rolling a dice. Now, what error behavior should we have this time? What we can say is that really severe errors like running out of disk space, deadlocks, they are in category 2. You can sort of predict that. But other errors, it's almost impossible only knowing this error trying to guess. There are even errors that falls into different groups depending on set options, the other one that exact abort on. It's really crazy. The good news is that if you turn on exact abort on, you lose 3, 4, and 5s. Now, most errors abort the batch and roll back the transaction. Unfortunately, we do get group 6 ignores exact abort on. And those race errors we saw, this error 266 also have the same effect. It does not never abort the batch. And also syntax errors, which matters if you do dynamic SQL. So if you have built dynamic SQL, you have a syntax error in it, that is not going to abort execution. But it's a fairly small group. There are a few more, but that I didn't mention. So I talked about attention signals, just to repeat this. It tells SQL Server, stop doing what you're doing. And it occurs when you get this client-side error, timeout expired. I often see people on the forums thinking that SQL Server times out. No, it's a client API. And by the way, you should make a judicious thought about what timeout you need. If you don't have an idea, 0, which means wait forever, is my recommendation. But 30 seconds is just, stupid. It could be just too long, or it could just be too short. And also, the red button in Management Studio generates these attention signals. And the statement is always rolled back, but only if exact abort is on, the transaction is rolled back. So a recommendation so far is that you should put this statement, set exact abort, command no count on the top of all your stored procedures. Now, no count has nothing to do with error handling, but it's best practice for other reasons. This gives you more consistent error behavior and reduces the risk for orphan transactions. It does not remove them entirely, because you could still have, put in begin transaction and forget to put commit at the end. Stupid things like that. But at least not because of unexpected errors. And you might be a bit confused by all these behaviors, so I like to sort of condense what is the takeaway so far. And that is, you cannot rely on that execution will be aborted in the case of an error. And you cannot rely on that you will be able to continue execution on an error. Those are the things you cannot rely on. You can rely on that you cannot rely on. So, and the conclusion of this is, first of all, keep things simple. Don't try to make any fancy error handling. And use try-catch. So we're going to look at try-catch. And the basic mechanism I would expect most people know, since it exists in other languages as well, is if there is an error in the try block, execution is transferred to the catch block. So we're going to look at this using the same table as before. And what I've done is I added a try block here in the procedure, and I've added the catch block, which is kind of odd, this catch block, because I do this for exploratory purposes. So it prints that an error was raised and the text of the error message. And then I commit the transaction. Very, very odd thing to do in a catch handler. But I do this to test what happens. And exact abort will be off in the first round. And then I just print it out that I'm exiting the catch handler. And in difference to the previous batch, I'm running the inner procedure directly and print out that I've run it. And then there's also the outer procedure, which is the same as before on the same catch handler. I will use this one for one test. So I will go and run this, and now it's not null error. And yeah, I have the same select at the bottom here as before. I go and run this, starting, erased error, cannot insert the value null, exiting catch handler, and after inner SP, one row in the table and no active transaction. Now, at this point, this is not surprising that there is one row in the table because since I'm doing this commit, so that is quite expected. then I'm going to change this to the bad date. And I expect maybe this to behave the same. Nope. I got a whole slew of error messages. Starting, raised error, conversion fail. And then I get, the current transaction cannot be committed and cannot support operations that write to the log file, roll back the transaction. Exiting catch handler, message 266, try and count mismatch. After inner P, and then it says, uncommittable transaction is detected at the end of the batch. The transaction is rolled back. No rows in the table and no active transaction. So, why did this happen? Now, the story is this. If the error would, on the normal, without try-catch, I should say, if the error without try-catch would have rolled back the transaction, it now, as they call it, dooms the transaction. And the doom transaction is exactly what that error message said. It cannot be committed. You cannot do anything. The only thing you can do in that transaction is to roll it back. And the funny thing here is that you might think that this message that says so would be an error that aborts the batch and rolls back the transaction. No. It only rolls back the current statement because SQL Server really thinks we should hold the axe ourselves. But, however, when we come down here and the batch exits, SQL Server says, it will only be a mess if this transaction is left open. So, I will roll it back anyway. So, we could test throw. And a run throw. Oh, this time, starting on throwing an error, exiting catch handler, one row in the table. So this time, we could commit, catch the error, and commit. And raise error. Yep, starting, raising an error, exiting catch handler, one row in the table. So that works nice. And can I catch this thing that closes the connection? Well, we can at least try. I need some patience, because it takes a while. You see the output now this time. Yeah. Should never happen. What they've done actually is that if they arrive to this place, they know that something is wrong. That's good programming actually. Because if they did not have that one, they could go on and make even more damage. But as you could see, no, we could not catch this error. And since I get the occasion, I like to point out that this message, zero, is for Management Studio, and it says a severe error occurred on the current command. The results, if any, should be discarded. Often when you get these errors, this is the only thing you see. And when you see this error, you come, something bad happened. Usually a bug in SQL Server. Could also be corruption. Look in the SQL Server log for more information. So now we could not catch that one, and that makes sense. And can I catch this error? The execution, the client timeout. Let's see. Yeah, maybe. No, I could not. And of course I cannot because the error, the catch handler is down here in SQL Server and the error with the timeout is up here in the client. So that makes sense. And I cannot catch these attention signals. Now, you might have noticed that I did not trust this one. So I can do this, I guess. But it should work like the other ones. No, it did not. Because after the test, there is an active transaction. No, invalid object, there's no such table. Trunk help mismatch, but nothing, no trace of a catch handler. We could not catch this error. Or can we? Let's see if we comment out this guy and try the outer procedure. Maybe that, let's see if that one can catch it. Yep. Outer SP starting, inner SP starting, outer SP raised error, invalid object name, and now the row was committed. But you cannot catch these compilation errors at runtime in the scope, in the procedure where they occur. I have reported this on Connect, someone else has reported it Connect, and they have closed it by design. And I don't understand that design. Or unless, of course, it's designed for maximum confusion. It might be that. So I'm going to restore things back to where I were with the not null error. And as you might guess, what is going to happen next is that I'm going to turn on execabort on. And you were right. So I'm going to, now we have the not null error. Run this. And you see, starting, The current transaction cannot be committed and cannot support blah, blah, blah. No rows on the table and no active transaction. Because now, with X active board on, the arrow would have rolled back the transaction if there had not been try catch. So now this arrow dooms the transaction. And this arrow also directly aborts the batch. So we get do not get this flood of error messages. The bad date. Things don't change, of course. No, same output. We can test throw. Semicolon throw. Yeah, the same behavior. Starting, throw again error. The current transaction cannot be committed and so on. But race error did not care about X active board on. So I guess we can catch that one and commit. No, we cannot. Because it's as simple as this. If X act abort is on, the transaction is always doomed. So, to summarize what we've seen about try and catch. So, you're coming into the catch block, and you may be able to continue, but the transaction may be doomed and must be rolled back. And if the error would have rolled back the transaction without try and catch, it is a dooming error. And that's perfectly reasonable for a deadlock or resource errors, like running out of disk space, but maybe less so for, like, let's say, conversion errors, where you may want to try something else. But that's the way it is, and always transactions always doom with X active board on. And as we saw, not all errors are catchable. We cannot catch these errors that close the connection. Well, makes sense, because after all, SQL Server has lost control, no longer knows what it's doing. And you cannot catch compilation errors in the scope they occur, but you can catch them in outer scopes. So if you're doing dynamic SQL in your procedure, and that one has a compilation error like non-existing table, that you can catch in the procedure because that's a different scope. And then I did not show you, but just to scare you, make you sleep worse, there are various odd errors you cannot catch, behaves in weird ways, mostly with sort of special features like linked service, CLR, and full text. I have in my article listed the ones I've seen. Interesting ones like there is an error, you put try catch around and nothing is caught and no error messages, it's just dropped on the floor. But they're not extremely common. And you cannot catch these attention signals. So, we need to have try catch and there needs to be a catch block in every procedure so we can at least get out, so we don't have these errors where the execution continues on the next statement. Now, an important principle here is that since this is code that is in every procedure, it must not be too long. It must be short and non-intrusive. You don't want the main meat of the procedure is this long and the catch block is this long. So two lines, that's all you need. Roll back any open transaction and re-raise the error because the next guy above you, or that might be the client, must know that you failed. It's extremely important. Sometimes I see people who have try catch, but the error is not re-raised, so it's dropped on the floor. Very, very bad. Very, very bad. So, always have this line in your catch box. If at a try count greater than zero, rollback transaction. Always, 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 zawsze. Yeah. I know some Polish, not much, but a little. Oh, thank you. Dziękuję. So, then you might say to yourself, but I don't have any transaction in my procedure, so why would I? Yeah, you don't have begin transaction today, but that could change tomorrow or 2 years later because someone sees the need to add a transaction to your procedure. Or that could even be implicit transaction being turned on. No, quite odd feature, but anyway, I would add that transaction 2 years, or someone else would do that because 2 years from now, you no longer work in the company. You've moved on. And someone else has taken over your crappy code. Would that person think of adding? Would that person think about adding begin transaction? Maybe not, because it's just doing this. And also, you might be calling a procedure from your code, and that procedure may start to transactions and may fail to roll it back for reasons we have seen. For example, it may not even be able to catch the error. And then you might say, but while the caller, I might be called inside the transaction, should I really roll back the caller's transaction? Yes, you should roll back the callless transaction as well, and I will talk more about that later. And then, okay, re-raising the error. How do I do this? And there's two ways to go. We can use a custom procedure, or we can use semicolon throw, and I will look at both. So the custom procedure, and the way I do this is that, well, here's the same table. I don't have the exact abort on because it comes later now, and the no count. And then I have an error handle SP, which is my custom procedure, and it has this line, set exact abort, comma no count on. And then I go on and collect all the information about the error messages. There's six components in an error message in SQL Server. There's the error number, the severity, how bad it is, the state, which, well, we could call this Microsoft internal. Sometimes it's useful, but not very often. In which procedure it occurred, if there was any procedure, on which line, and the text of the message. And then I check the text of the message if it starts with three asterisks. And if it does, oh, I need to scroll. I go on and add the procedure name, or says that it dynamic SQL if there is no name. I add the line number, the error number, and the message itself. I do not include severity in text because I use raise error to raise the message, and raise error permits me to specify severity and state as parameter. And then I actually pass the error message as a parameterized string and pass this error message as a parameter. That helps if the error message would happen to include a parenthesis. And then I have my in-resp, which now has proper error handling. So I do have this line, set exact abort, comma no count on, before begin try. And there is a point in this, because this code should be in every procedure, but it should be non-intrusive. I don't want to see this all the time, but I'm looking, what is this procedure doing? So I put it before begin try, so the only time I see it is when I'm doing code review. Oh, wait a minute, that line is missing, add it. But when I'm looking at the real logic of the procedure, I don't want to see it. So I've, well, it's the same thing as before, except I've, well, taken away some of the comments or the various areas, and I've changed this one, so the ID is now 13%. And the catch block is now proper one. If at a try count greater than zero, rollback transaction, and run error handler SP. And the same thing for the outer procedure. Also have a proper catch block. And it also have this line. And I'm going to run the inner procedure for this 13% error. And what happened now? Sorry, because I had selected one single line, it only ran that one. Okay, sorry. Okay, so we say inner SP starting, message 50,000, that comes from Razer, I cannot change that. It's always 50,000. And level 16, state 1, and that you will have to believe me, that's the level and state of the original message. Procedure error handler SP, line 17, that's the line for the Razer statement. I cannot change that. But the next line, oops, has in-resp, line 12, error in 245, and conversion failed when converting the varchar value 13% to data type int. So you see, here we are. It was a good idea to use that version of raise error. And there's no row in the table, so it was caught. And I can go on and play with this and run the out-resp. Now the error is raised and re-raised once more. But the output is the same because I checked for these three asterisks, so the error message will not change. I could theoretically make it a stack trace if I wanted to, but I did not do that. This is quite nice, but there is a problem, though, with this method. As you will see with this one up here, we have a backup statement. Backup database to master to disk, K no such disk. So this one, when I run this, you will see that it produces two error messages. Cannot open backup device, and then operating system error 3, the system cannot find the path specified. And then there is a second error telling me that backup database is terminating abnormally in case I did not notice. Well, what happens when this comes in between try and catch? I run this, and starting in-resp, line 6, error 3013, backup database is terminating abnormally. So now I know that backup failed, but unfortunately I lost why it failed. Because, well, I can only collect one error, and it happens to be the second error, which happened in this case to be the non-interesting one. Now, fortunately, though, most errors of these kind where you get two error messages are with sort of things that the DBA would do, like backup restore, or DDL things like create table, create index constraints, but not so much in code you would typically get in applications. Then there is another problem also with this solution. I should keep that one. And that is the fact that if the caller does not have try-catch, execution could continue in that one. If I want to be sure about that, I can use throw instead. Semicolon throw. And then throw does not permit me to specify the severity. It's always 16, so I just add that to the error number because I can specify the error number and the state. So I run this. And this time, well, it's the same behavior. Yes, I should do this with the other one. That's more fun. I do this with the percent error. Oops, no text at all. Because throw does not accept a you cannot parameterize the error message throw. Nevertheless, throw looks at the semicolon. Oh, sorry, the percent looks at the percent character. So it still performs replacements. You need also, if you do this, you need to replace the percentage character with double percent. And now, we get the complete message. It's not extremely common that you have error messages with percentage character, but if you're writing a common error handler which is used all over the place, such things become important. Well, then we get the semicolon throw statement we can also use in our catch handling. So I'll go directly down to the catch block. If at a try count greater than zero, rollback transaction, semicolon throw without arguments, this form of throw can only be used between begin catch and catch. It has the same effect, it aborts the batch, but will not roll back in open transaction. But that's not a problem because we have this one. And of course, there's also exec abort on up here. So in that case, it will roll back the transaction. I'm going to run this. And the nice thing is now that it says message 2 in a 4-5, level 16, state 1, procedure in NSP, line 12, which is the line where the error actually occurs, and conversion failed and so on, 13%, no problem with percentage character this time. That is, we get the error message exactly like it was raised originally, which is sort of nice. And it's even nicer if we do this backup thing. Because now I get both error messages. So throw, give me both error messages. Nothing's lost. Really, really nice. But unfortunately, there is a problem with this one as well. Because, yes, why do you think I put that semicolon over there? Well, so the story is this. When Microsoft add new statements to SQL Server, they avoid as much as possible to make these statements reserved keywords. Because maybe you were on 2008 and you wrote a procedure called throw. And there is a procedure which says exec throw. You upgrade to SQL 2012 and now that's a syntax error. Well, you don't really like that. You get angry. You call Microsoft. So, yeah, Microsoft don't like those phone calls. So instead, you have to put a semicolon before that statement. Or actually, well, Microsoft says, I don't have semicolons at the end of my statement. Microsoft says that it's deprecated. I should really do this. Put semicolons there, put semicolons there. I have it there, No, I should not put it there because this is a syntax error. You cannot have semicolon after end try. So that's what they think you should be doing. But the problem with this is that if you do this, you might even have the habit of doing this. Good boy. I'm doing this because there's no way to enforce this, so I don't trust myself, so I just skip it. I'm an old fart, that's just why. But the problem, even if you have the habit, it's easily just filling around the editor, you happen to delete this one. Well, then you might say, well, who cares? This is a syntax error, so I will be told. Well, I run this, and you see absolutely no error message at all. The only thing which is strange is it says starting, but no completed. But no error message. Uh-oh, what happened? Well, I can comment out the backup database, and now it will fail inside the transaction. There is an error message, but not the one we expected. Cannot roll back throw. No transaction or save point with that name was found. Uh-oh, what's going on here? Well, the story is this. Oh, wait. No, I still haven't learned the keyboards. So, this statement is actually perfectly legal syntax. And what it means, I will show you a few slides later on. So, that's why I think you should put it this way. Put the semicolon before the throw so it really stands out. You can really see it. And if you don't see this in a code review, your eyes is going to hurt. You're going to yell out, oh, put in the semicolon. It doesn't matter whether it's up here or not. You really need to have it here if you're using throw. And sort of, that's why I like you to think of the statement as semicolon throw, to avoid this. So, we have looked at two ways of re-raising the error. And then you might ask, when would I use one or the other? Well, first of all, if you're on ESCO 2005 or 2008, you use a custom procedure because you don't have a throw. And you might want to, well, have some custom behavior like logging the error to a table. We do that in our system. And you are really scared of this semicolon trap, so I don't want to use that. Then again, throw also has its advantages. First of all, it's simple, certainly, very simple to use. And all error messages are preserved as is. Definitely not bad, really good. And, well, make sure that the execution is aborted. You can achieve that in the custom procedure if you use throw rather than raise error. So, let's move over to the client. Yes, we need error handling in the client. And first this, when the client calls ESCO Server, you must check, depending on the language and the API and so on, but you must check, was there an error? And if there was an error, you should always react with, if at a train count greater than zero, roll back the transaction. There's one exception to that rule, and that is if you have started a transaction on the client level through a transaction object, then you should use that transaction object. You need to do this even if you have exact abort on in the procedures, because you should not rely on the client, should not rely on that the server is doing its job and vice versa. Each component should make sure that things are cleaned up. And also there could be an error with begin commit and so on. And there's one more thing to say about the client. Make sure that you get all result sets. Now, what do I mean by that? Well, here's the next demo, and for those who are entirely SQL people, don't be shocked, this isn't C#. So, I have a batch here, and the try-catch is commented out, and this is a statement that is designed to return a couple of rows, and then it will produce an error. And then I have a very small program where I set up a connection, I set up a command with that batch, and I run this over an execute reader, and I just simply count the rows. And then I'm thinking, oh, this statement is only returning, there's only one result set, so I don't need to move on to the next result set, I think. So don't do that. I commented that out. And then I just print the number of rows produced, and then I have a catch handler. Yes, I'm a good boy. Oops, scrolling too fast. So I have a catch handler which says, if at a train count greater than zero, rollback transaction, and run that. And then I print out the error that was actually raised. So I go and run this, compile and run this, error and an invalid floating point operation occurred. So then I go and comment out, activate this try catch block. Of course, this is a kind of funny thing to submit from a client directly, but just imagine that it is a procedure, and also maybe a longer one, where this select is at the end. So I go, compile, run, 60 rows read. The error message went out the window. What happened? Well, what happened is this, that now things got a little differently organized on the TDS stack. So previously, the error message came as part of this result set. But now, it is produced by this statement. And the way about all client APIs work is that they don't serve this error to the client until you moved on to the next result set. So I do this, activate this line, where I go through all result sets, return, just to make sure, compile a run, and the error message is back in town. That's the virtue of getting all, result sets. Let's now talk about nested transactions. And I'm getting a little short of time, but I think I will keep this going anyway, because this is the last session. It would not take too long. I think Greg ran over with a few minutes as well, so I can do that. So the nested transactions, well, and I put that in quotes because there are not really any nested transactions. You say begin transaction, and the transaction starts. And then maybe in the nested procedure, you say begin transaction again. And all that happens is that train count is incremented. And then I say commit transaction. Nothing is committed at this point. All that happens is the train count is decremented. And then I say commit transaction again. And now train count goes down to zero, and the transaction is committed. Now, where does rollback fit into this? Well, rollback always rollbacks everything, no matter whether it comes here, here, or here. It pulls the rug entirely for the transaction and brings down transaction to zero. Train count to zero. Now, let's say we have nested procedure, and I talked about that earlier. I have an outer procedure that starts the transaction. I have an inner procedure that also has its own transaction to be atomic if it's called separately. Now, the inner procedure fails. Now, we might think, should that one really pull the rug for the outer procedure? Maybe the outer procedure would have liked to take an alternate action? Yeah, it should not roll back the outer transaction. However, we are an SQL server, so we don't have much of a choice. We have the choice of rolling back everything or nothing at all, but we have failed to fulfill our contract, so not rolling back is not an option. We have to roll back everything. We don't have any choice. Now, someone might then whisper in your ears, "The save points, save points." So I need to talk about save points, just in case. What you can do, in theory, in SQL Server, you can say begin transaction, and you can give it a name, mytran. And then you can do the first part. Then you can say save transaction, mySave. Do the second part, and roll back transaction, mySave. What happens now is that this part is rolled back, but the first part is still active, can still be committed. And yes, I could call the transaction or the save point throw if I want to, so that's why you have that syntax. Because this is much older than the throw statement. But they should have disallowed this, but they missed that. Well, anyway, going back to the idea, is this not useful for the scenario we saw on the previous slide? It may sound like that. Save points are useless. Why? Because you cannot roll back to a save point when the transaction is doomed. And I have told you to have exactly bought on, so the transaction is always doomed. Now, and even if you were listening to me and run the exactly bought off, well, you can only roll back on sunny days. The rainy days, the batch will be aborted because you've got such an error. So it's sort of useless. And also, it's not supported within distributed transactions. Well, I don't do distributed transactions. The thing is, you cannot tell. Yeah, I mean, someone might on the other server over there might get the idea to call your procedure. You cannot even check whether you are in a distributed transaction. What I can tell is the error and the way it happens when you do this. I've done this, and it was painful, really painful. We had to use profiler to find out what was going on. Now for something entirely different. Natively compiled store procedures, introduced in ESCO 2014 as part of Hackathon or in-memory OLTP. So Microsoft started here with a blank page. They can do everything from scratch, no legacy. And amazingly enough, they did it right. So the first thing to observe is this. You have to say create procedure with native compilation, and you also have to say schema binding. Schema binding means that if this procedure refers to something that does not exist, you will get an error. And if you create the procedure and you try to drop something the procedure is referring to, you will get an error. So you cannot even get compilation errors at runtime. No deferred name resolution here. But what is really interesting is this thing, which is mandatory, begin atomic, and then there is a mumbo jumbo we don't care about here, and end. If the transaction comes down to end, because this is a scoped transaction, if execution comes down here, the transaction is committed. If it exits with an error somewhere on the line, it is rolled back. And a little more about this. So first of all, a procedure and a transaction that's one-to-one. You cannot nest these atomic blocks, at least now, not for now. And also, because if there is an error that aborts the procedure and rolls back the transaction, you only need try catch if you expect a certain error and you want to handle it. But you don't need it as a matter of routine. And these guys, these are not permitted. Actually, that's quite a few things that are not permitted in hackathon procedure because they have not implemented everything yet. But these guys do not even make sense. Now, even more interesting is this. So the outer procedure calls an inner procedure. Now that defines an implicit save point. Oh, they were useless, you said. Oh, wait, hang on. So, and that inner procedure has an error. It's not caught, and the transaction is rolled back to that save point. And now for the really cool thing. In Hackathon, transactions are only doomed when there's a good reason to. Because of, for example, running out of memory, resource errors, or concurrency error, it read a row, someone else updated it, and now you try to update that row. You can't get a deadlock because there's no locks in Hackathon. But some other concurrency errors you can get, there are a few of them, they doom the transaction because it doesn't make sense to continue. And also, exec abort on has no effect. In short, this is how error handling should have been in the entire product. If they only have did it right in way back in the 1980s in California at Sybase. Who are to blame for some of the weird things we have seen? But Microsoft has added quite a few funny things to themselves. So I'm coming towards the end. I'm going to make a summary, but I'm going to make that traditional summary. I would talk this about aims and means. So what do we want to achieve with our error handling, and what are the means to do that? First of all, always communicate unexpected errors. Do not lure users to think that they see correct data. If there is an error, like a not null violation, it should be propagated all the way up to the UI. You might want to hide the mumbo jumbo, but not null, blah, 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 and just replace it with a generic message, please contact the system administrator, and just log the error on somewhere else. But never lure the users to think about it. Remember that one with the 60 rows red. Well, the user sees 60 rows. Yeah, I'm happy about this. I think the company can expand a bit. We have the funds for that. Well, that 61st row that caused the exception was the one would have told the users that the company is about to go bust. So that can be very, very important so the users do not make incorrect decisions. And the aims and means, or sorry, the means to achieve this is to re-raise the error and get all result sets. Also, we must abort execution on unexpected errors, so we don't go and persist incorrect data. Set exec abort on. If at a try and count, roll back transactions so anything that has been written is rolled back, and re-raise the error so the next guy knows that, yeah, something went wrong. Prevent orphan transactions. If you haven't seen these, you should be happy. They are really painful. We had horrors because you have just locks assembling and so on. And then everyone is screaming, and one user is happy, can continue until he logs out. Where did my updates go? Again, set exec abort on. If at a try and count, rollback transaction, also in the client count. And finally, do not lose the original error message. Because if you don't have the original error message, its troubleshooting becomes very, very difficult. All you see is an error message from the error handler or something like that, or a generic error. Or we saw a few examples of these. We lost backup restore. Fortunately, that is one we might have to live with, but it's not good. We saw the blank error message with throw because of the percentage character, and even worse, the worst thing of it all, semicolon throw. We lost the semicolon. So, things here, keep it simple and watch out for the semicolon trap. So if you write a custom error handler, don't make it too fancy and test everything of it. You don't want an error message from your error handler. Well, that was all for me. Well, I'm still, if you ask questions, I'm open for these. But my name, Alan Sommerskog. My email address, ssgirl@sommerskog.se. At my website, sommerskog.se/present, you find all scripts and slides for this presentation. And if you would read the full story, it's down here. Sommerskog.se, well, you can just go to sommerskog.se and then you will find the list of articles. And the part one, that's a short one, 12 pages. The second one and third one are much longer. The third one has quite a bit of extensive examples, and the appendix covers special things like linked servers and CR and things. And yeah, once more, I'd like to thank all sponsors. And if you have questions, or you all want to go to the party, yeah, let's go to party. Yeah. Thank you very much.